So now, in today's drama by John Fletcher, based on a true story, Sian Thomas stars as the spurned Victorian spinster Christiana Edmonds, who, in the 1860s, hatched a deadly plan, poisoning a local doctor, his wife, and random townsfolk in Brighton with batches of delicious but deadly confectionery.
The Great Chocolate Murders by John Fletcher.
Mother, why are we coming this way? It's cold.
The promenade is good for you, child. Good for both of us. It keeps us healthy.
I'm cold. I'm very cold, Mother.
I wonder what I should write to your brothers and sisters today. I could tell them about our trip to the milliner's this morning. How you bought that very nice strip of lavender camlet for your Saturday hat.
Mother, can you do nothing but write to my brothers and sisters? Oh, sometimes I just feel...
What, Christiana?
You perpetually think of them, never of me.
That is not true.
Sometimes I think of what I might have been, not this old maid.
Christiana, you are
stuck in this wretched, squalid seaside town. Instead, I might have... Oh.
Christiana, come back!
I can't bear it any longer. I run away, down onto the beach. Dark grey waves pound on pebbles in the half-light of a winter's day. My life is nothing. When suddenly, on that grim December afternoon, through the darkness of Brighton Beach, shoots this bolt of brightest gold sun, illuminating all. And through this tunnel of light, amid soft sea spray and blue waters, walks this man, huge, striding towards me, holding down his great top hat, some woman on his arm, and as he comes alongside me, great black coats billowing out, he turns and I see his face. A face of great kindness and understanding and strength looks directly into my eyes. Great beard, glowing blue eyes, raises his hat and says,
"Good afternoon."
And the sunlight vanishing, he disappears into the gloom.
My child.
That gentleman walking along the beach down there with that woman.
Oh, that is Dr. Beard. I believe he and his wife live round the corner at 64 Grand Parade.
A doctor?
Christiana, I think it's time we went home. I made you a gentle posset of chamomile milk. Now you must not get overexcited.
Doctor, I've got this pain. This terrible pain.
Excuse me?
I have this most terrible pain in my abdomen, down here. If I were to disrobe...
Excuse me, but who exactly are you?
Oh, Dr. Beard, I am Christiana Edmonds. My mother and I, we are most respectable folk. We live at 16 Gloucester Place.
Oh?
Yes, we're a very old Brighton family. An income of almost 5,000 a year. Lived here since the days of the Prince Regent.
You're that lady I saw on the beach yesterday, aren't you?
Yes, Doctor, I am. And I have this most awful pain in my abdomen.
Yes, I see. Well, if you were to lie down here, this robe...
Yes, Doctor...
And I looked up into those eyes, those great, kind eyes of his, and felt his strong hands as they started to touch me. And I knew. I knew all would be well. Who would have thought, after such a fortuitous meeting, that within months, a few months, the two of us...
I am born aloft. Your love bears me aloft on wings of such passion and intensity.
Do we not see the world like eagles from some great height far, far beneath us, of no matter or consequence?
Every night I lie awake thinking of you, your beauty. Each day, as I must face my dreary, stumbling patience, I dream.
The two of us, are we not like two? My sweetest dream, dearest Percy, was it only yesterday when the two of us...
What are you writing, Christiana?
Nothing, Mother. It has nothing to do with you.
I know it is good for you to write letters, correspond with friends and acquaintances, but...
I merely imitate you, Mother. You spend your entire time, rather than paying attention to me, writing to my brothers and sisters, or when he was alive, Papa.
Christiana, you are now 43 years old.
42 years old, Mother.
I am sorry, my child, 42. But I do think you might by now have come to understand why I must send letters so frequently to your siblings. Visit them? It is not because I do not love you.
Mother, there was this most enormous rat in my bedroom last night. It sat, watched me in this most evil way as I combed my hair, disrobed.
I know, child.
Oh, this horrid town we live in, its stinking drains and sewers, these squalid, unbecoming lodgings. Oh,
it was different, child, once. When the Prince Regent graced Brighton with his court, then our family lived in more gracious surroundings. We had a...
Yes, Mother, but what am I going to do about this rat?
I'm sure there's still some strychnine under the scullery sink, Christiana. From the last time we had this problem. Now, all you have to do is...
Morning, one and all.
Billy!
Another package for you, Miss Christiana.
You're a good boy, Billy. Here's threepence for your trouble.
Christiana, you're not paying that boy, that little street Arab, 3 pennies for delivering a package from the post office.
He's worth every penny, aren't you, Billy?
Worth me weight in gold.
What's in that package, Christiana?
None of your business, Mother.
You're not buying sensational novels under the counter again.
No, Mother. Here, Billy, deliver this package back for me.
Of course, Miss Christiana. Service is my pleasure.
Christiana.
Mother.
Who are you sending letters to? Who do you receive letters from?
Mother, it is absolutely none of your business. As you say, I am 42 years old. It is from him, my true love, Miss Edmonds.
This letter is to inform you that your distasteful and disgracefully immodest correspondence, which you have chosen without encouragement on my part to bombard me with over the past few weeks, my wife having accidentally discovered them within my desk, to her great distress, must from this moment cease.
Cease?
Or I shall have no alternative but to inform the police.
Police?
Yours, etc., P. Beard Doctor.
He wrote that. My beloved wrote... The rat is still here, staring at me. My beloved has been ill-informed. Or rather, his wife has. What he and I had was not ignoble, shameful, wrong. It was glorious, right, full of morality and goodness. I must talk to his wife, put this right immediately. I go straight to Monsieur Armand's chocolate shop on West Parade.
Armand, Armand, I wish to be served.
Un moment, mademoiselle, I served another.
All Brighton attends here. Silly girls giggle over their tasse de chocolat. Older women hide guilty packages of marzipan under their ample robes.
2 dozen pralines for Lady Attersley.
Street urchins run in with orders. Even common railway excursionists from London wander about.
Thanks, Governor.
Mademoiselle, I apologise.
Armand, as you know, I come from a most fine Brighton family. Mother has always impressed on me the importance of chocolate.
Madame?
On the occasion one is first introduced to another, often a moment of some delicacy, she always says the best way of easing that moment un peu difficile is by the offering of chocolat.
Yes?
Armand, I have a most difficult social moment to go through, a breakthrough, so it is vitalement important I go armed with the right chocolate. As the chocolate melts, the difficulties between us must immediately disappear.
I am not exactly certain...
I am prepared to spend much money on this.
Aha! Uh-huh.
The second it enters their mouth, it must make them gentle, sympathetic of me, wishing to listen and understand every request I have to make.
So, the mademoiselle wishes me to sell her a chocolat that the second this... person tastes it. Voila, they are your amis.
I do not care at what expense.
Madame, normally I would recommend a creme like orange or mint. They enter the mouth, and in an hour or two, you are amis. But now, you need a chocolat much more powerful, combative.
Exactly.
Madame, in Paris, there is a brilliant young chocolatier, Henri d'Antoine. He has invented an incredible chocolat nouveau. On the outside, chocolat, a shell. But on the inside, a pure liqueur, cognac. You give one or two of these to your friend, and very, very soon, with all that Napoleon brandy, you are a me.
You have some?
They have not generally been introduced to these shores. Their taste is considered too bitter, too extreme for British palates. But the House Armand does have a few, oui.
As I thought, his door from the street to his surgery is open. The smell is so familiar. Ahead lies the door where our beauty took place. But to one side, a door to his private house. I have never been in there before. I know he's not here. I saw him alone on the beach. I'm here to see someone else.
Mrs. Beard. Mrs. Augusta Beard.
Who are you?
I'm Miss Christiana Edmonds. I am
here... What are
here
you doing in my
it's
drawing
most
room?
It's important I see you. We talk.
What do you want?
As I said, I am Christiana Edmonds.
You are Christiana Edmonds?
And it's most important that you and I are friends. We talk. You understand what it is that your husband and I...
I want you to leave.
Look, I've brought you chocolates. We must eat these chocolates to become friends.
You must leave immediately.
Then the two of us can talk and you will come to understand why your husband, Percy, and I must...
Get out of my house!
Have a chocolate.
I don't want a chocolate.
It will do you good. Calm you down.
Get out!
A chocolate. Have it.
Oh, let go of me. Oh,
we must be friends.
Oh,
it tastes foul. It tastes...
You were trying to poison me.
What?
You break into my house. You force me to eat a chocolate which is clearly poisoned.
It is not poisoned. Honestly, it is not poisoned.
I receive another letter
from my sweetest Percy, saying I tried to poison his wife. The supposed chocolate was bitter and acrid and contained poison, saying he'd go to the police, but since I possess certain letters that, if revealed, might cause great upset and suffering to my dear wife, if I never ever bother them again, perhaps he will not go to the police. I walk on the beach. I hate this place. Hate it. The filth, the sewage, the human jetson that sleeps on it. Percy is a great doctor, a most learned man of science. In his surgery, where we used to... He had a laboratory full of test tubes, chemicals, scientific equipment, where he used to diagnose the diseases of his patients. If he states that that chocolate was poisoned, and he's not a man to lie, then it must be so. But it was not I who tried to poison him.
What is Madame accusing me of?
You sell me this chocolate that you claim was Parisian. But when the lady, the sweet lady I intended it for, to make friends with, tasted it, it was full of poison. Now she won't even speak to me.
Madame is accusing moi, Monsieur Armand, of selling poison chocolate? Absurd! Look, I hold here the most exquisite, delicate lime fondant, wrapped in rich folds of darkest chocolate. I pop it in my mouth. Et voilà! I live!
A man of the utmost scientific eminence assures me your chocolates contain poison. You have broken up a perfect friendship I intended to have with a lady. I shall expose you.
Expose me, madame? Expose? I tell you, you see that large man over there? He will throw you out of that door if you do not leave this house immediately. And another thing. If I ever hear a hint of your scandalous allegations, the police shall be informed. Goodbye.
My Percy shall only ever return to our love, our wonderful love, and this whole awful, squalid misunderstanding that has invaded our beautiful world be banished forever, if I can demonstrate to his great, compassionate intelligence that it was not I who attempted to poison his wife, but another. My father, when he lived, used to speak of the treachery of the French. He knew men who'd fought Napoleon. And yet, here, now, in our midst, we allow a Frenchman to exist, to prosper rat-like, and cold-bloodedly plan the destruction of Brighton. I alone can, must prove this.
Good morning.
I have rats.
I see.
I know all of Brighton suffers from rats because of our terrible sanitation system, but I can stand it no more.
Would madam wish to purchase a rat trap?
No. I would prefer poison.
Strychnine?
Yes, please.
If madam would just sign the poison book.
I've got to sign that.
10 ounces of strychnine for Tippins the draper.
Here you are, boy. Got it packed. Just take for it in the book.
There you are, Mr. Garrett. Much obliged.
That boy, I recognise him.
A little gutter snipe, madam. Does deliveries for different tradesmen round here.
Where does he live?
On the beach, like most of them. Name of Sam. Now, about that poison.
I've decided against it.
Sam?
Yeah?
You're cold, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am. Very cold, down on this beach.
Would you like to be warm? Very warm. and have enough money, a few pence, to buy hot meals.
I think I'd like that better than anything in the world, Mom.
Good. It is quite simple. Sam, a half-wit, buys the strychnine, signs for it in the name of some tradesman. My Billy, a much faster-witted boy, will merely fetch me chocolates from Armand's under a false name one day, return them the next, saying they are wrong and asking for others in their place. It will be proved Monsieur Armand's chocolates contain poison. Percy and I shall be reunited.
That sermon was filled with God.
Aye, it was.
The strength of Jesus Christ entered me. I felt his mercy in my soul.
Hallelujah.
My name's Jacob Ormsley.
Alexander McLean. Which way are you walking?
How about we turn down Grand Parade, Old Steen, and walk along the promenade? The beach smells bad, but not as bad as up here in town.
I've never known a worse town for stinks.
No drains, you see. Where's your home?
Glasgow.
Ah, you've got fine drains there. Constructed by John Hawkshaw himself.
John Hawkshaw?
After Joshua Bazalgette, I reckon Britain's greatest sewage engineer. Between them, they've reformed every major city. Glasgow, Manchester, Leeds, Birmingham, even London herself. Everywhere, except Brighton. We walk Grand Parade, the town's major thoroughfare, but under our feet runs not one single pipe or sewer. All the waste just runs straight into backyard sumps, hence the stink.
You seem well informed.
I'm a sewage engineer. In Manchester, we solved the problem decades ago. So, when a position came up here in Brighton, I took it like a shot. What's your profession, Alex?
Police. And I found myself in a similar situation. In Glasgow, we have a modern, most well-organised police force, independent of the city council and effective in its pursuit of criminals. I, too, was looking for a challenge.
How do you find Brighton?
Frustrating. On occasions, shameful. We should provide policing for all the town. Instead, we provide excellent, obsequious even, policing for well-to-do areas. Those who've lived here since Prince Regent times. But none in the rookeries and tenements of the poor. Those who suffer the most from crime. And worse, none for the excursionists who visit from London by train, who could bring real wealth and prosperity to Brighton. And I try to make this point to my inspector, but he always tells me the town council, especially an Alderman Hallett, says policing just puts up the rates.
Hallett's my boss. I spent months drawing up proposals for a proper sewage system. Does he take any notice? Got a meeting with him tomorrow where we're meant to discuss it. 9:30 sharp in his office.
No time for office meetings, Mr. Ormsley. I'm a busy man. Weddings, dinners, funerals to attend.
You haven't read my proposal, Alderman?
Just give me a broad outline. Before my carriage reaches the ground.
It's 200 pages long.
Then speak fast.
Well, as you know, Brighton has many problems with its...
waste products.
Yes, and their resultant effluvium. This is because all our waste products flow into cesspits, then soak into the ground from which many poorer local inhabitants draw their drinking water.
Always drink bottled myself.
In poor areas, death rates from typhoid and cholera often rise above the 1.3 per thousand rate recorded in London's 1848 cholera outbreak.
Yes, yes, yes. But what about the stink?
I can stop that, Alderman.
You can?
Sewage must be drained by an efficient system of sewers, separate, isolated from the town's water supplies, discharging into a grand 12-foot sewer running to an outfall near Portobello.
Portobello? Portobello's miles off. What's this going to cost?
£190,000.
What?
Alderman Hallett, it would really help Brighton's prosperity. At the moment, a few excursionists, ordinary, decent families, come by train from London, but the stink of the town drives them away.
If we could build proper sewers...
Oh, don't even suggest that. If I put a proposal to double the rates to my electors, my effigy would be paraded through the streets on bonfire night.
Then what am I to do? Am I out of a job?
No, no, of course not. I want you drawing up as many plans as possible, in the greatest detail.
Just so I don't lay down a single actual drain.
We understand each other perfectly.
A small hole is carved in the side of the chocolate. Tiny grains of strychnine are then poured into the hole. I see little of Dr. Beard on the beach. When I do, he is escorted by his wife. Every day I scour the papers for reports of Monsieur Armand's chocolates poisoning people. There is nothing. Just endless reports of people dying of cholera. Obviously, Monsieur Armand's chocolates do not contain enough poison. The amount will have to be increased.
Look at the view from up here.
On top of the downs, away from the stink of Brighton.
Such a lovely day. I suggested this walk for a purpose, Jacob. There's something I should tell you.
Aye?
Concerning my police work and your department.
What's that?
3 weeks ago, a family, a decent, ordinary family, Mr. and Mrs. Barker and their young son, Sydney, came down from London on an excursion. They walked down from the station into the town, purchased some chocolates at Monsieur Armand's, and then went on to the beach.
It's in a terrible condition, that beach.
Well, young Sydney got thirsty, drank from a water fountain. Soon afterwards, he became ill. Very ill. Later that night, he died. His parents, understandably, were very upset. They've employed a scientist. Having examined the contents of his stomach, he concluded that he could have died of cholera. And then after conducting tests on the fountain, he discovered that the water did indeed contain the bacterium of cholera. Oh. The inquest's in a week. Everything will come out there. I thought, knowing your concern on this matter, I should warn you.
Alderman Hallett, that lad died.
Most unfortunate.
The inquest will reveal to everyone the terrible state of this town's sewers and water supplies.
Perhaps.
I know you must consider the rates, Alderman, but don't you think my proposal should at least be published to show the public we are doing something?
Mr. Ormsley, what time is it?
11:45, Alderman.
Right. I must meet a delegation of town councillors from Worthing arriving on the 12:27. Before that, you and I is going to observe the arrival at the terminus of the 12:15 express from London.
What?
It's time you clocked what makes Brighton tick. The 12:15. Tell me, Mr. Ormsley, what do you observe about the passengers as they alight?
Well, there appear to be some families. Lots of children.
Oh, that's third class. What about the first class?
Quite a few young ladies, rather ostentatiously dressed, with older men. Oh, but there's plenty of maturer women with older men, their husbands.
Anything strike you as strange about them married couples, Mr. Ormsley? The way they look into each other's eyes, bill and coo, touch each other's cheeks, strike you as the behaviour of long married couples?
Well, one hopes they might...
Come with me. Now, look from up here, how these persons go down into our town.
Well, some of them are getting into cabs.
With haste.
Others are wandering down the hill, arm in arm, going into
flower shops.
What a nice bunch of lilies that gentleman's bought his lady.
Into milliners.
To purchase garments for his beloved, perhaps.
And some, most, are turning toward the Grand Parade, off into the great squares and crescents.
Once owned by Brighton's wealthiest families, who now prefer to live in more modest dwellings, renting their larger houses out to Ormsley. There's no way I can spare your non-conformist sensibilities. In this hard-working nation of ours, every town has its trade. Glasgow, shipyards, Lancashire, cotton mills. Birmingham is black with the smoke from 1,000 forges. London grows fat on its stock exchange. We in Brighton have one major industry alone. Adultery. We are Britain's capital of adultery. Wealthy husbands bring their young doxies down here from as far as Macclesfield and West Bromwich. Respectable matrons from Knightsbridge and Kensington kiss their husbands goodbye in the morning, hurry swiftly down here to do whatever they wish to, and can be back home in Knightsbridge by 6 in the evening to kiss hubby home from a hard day in the city. We even, Mr. Ormsley, turns a blind eye to certain painted, lisping youths of the male sex who engage in Grecian activities behind drawn curtains and locked doors. You groan, Mr. Ormsley. Look beneath us, at all the flower shops, milliners, dressmakers, chocolate makers, the discreet restaurants, the chambermaids and laundrymen, the landladies and the landlords, all the wealth and employment it brings in. Brighton's prosperity, Mr. Ormsley, is founded hard on creaking bedsprings.
But all this sinfulness, this extreme unpleasantness aside, Alderman Hallett, I still do not see what any of this has to do with the reformation of Brighton's sewage system.
Must I spell it out? The train whistles departing Victoria. You and your beloved are alone, in very paradise, as you whirl past West Croydon, three bridges. You arrive at Brighton, leap into a hansom, are delivered to your particular address, rush upstairs, and there, behind drawn curtains, awaits the warmest, softest of beds.
Alderman Hallett.
I apologise, but just when what's about to happen starts to happen, what happens outside? A terrible crashing and banging, the sounds of workmen cussing. Why? Because the whole street's been dug up to lay the sewers. Would any adulterer in his right mind endure it? They'll catch the next train to Eastbourne and never come back.
That's true. But the fact is, a young lad's died. And at his inquest, the scandal of our sewage system will become public knowledge.
Strange you should say that. The council is in need of someone to represent them at the inquest. Mr. Ormsley.
Each day, I scour the papers for news of some shameful poisoning. Then I spot it. Tomorrow afternoon, an inquest is to be held into the death of Sidney Albert Barker, aged 4, who, it says, ate some chocolate from Monsieur Armand's, walked on the beach, drank some water, and died. Tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock. That poor child's death must be avenged.
That man, that Alderman Hallett, wants me, to stand upright at the inquest and to protect him and his counsel, tell lies and evasions and half-truths. I stand half-stooped in the gloom and stink of Brighton's only sewer. It's only 4'6" high, laid down 70 years ago, when Brighton was a tenth its present size. Blocked knee-deep in filth and excrement, overrun with rats and mice. This is what I must cover over, conceal, suppress. As one always should in situations like this, I pray to my Lord God, I examine my conscience. If I refuse, resign, then what use am I?
I am the only man knowledgeable enough to reform Brighton's drains, save lives. So I must stay in my position. Await my moment. But only once. Only once shall I lie. Next time, I shall speak truth.
Answer me, Mr. Ormsley. Explain the presence of the Bacillus vibrio cholera in the water fountain.
Well...
You deny it. You heard, did you not, expert testimony that huge numbers of the bacillus, under a microscope, were observed swarming in the very water your council presents as being wholesome and safe for all to drink, even young children.
As far as I'm aware, the drinking water has always been perfectly acceptable for everyone to drink.
The folk I can't bear to look at are the boy's parents. She sobs. He stares. Straight at me. Apart from a few bored journalists gazing at the ceiling and a rather wild-looking woman, no one else is in court.
Answer me, Mr. Ormsley. If it wasn't the water, what was it that poisoned young Sidney Albert Barker?
I'm afraid I have no idea. That is, if he even was poisoned.
Are you denying that Brighton's drains have been for years a national disgrace? That the poor citizens of Brighton suffer scandalous standards of public hygiene because the town council is too mean to reform them?
The journalists start to wake up, write things down. The wild woman looks wilder. I even catch a glimpse of a nervous Alderman Hallett behind a curtain.
Well, Mr. Ormsley, is well all the town council can say to this disgraceful scandal, to the death of this poor boy, is this...
This is ridiculous. Quite ridiculous.
Suddenly the wild woman speaks.
All this carry-on about water and germs and municipal taps. I know what poisons Sidney Albert Barker. I know who poisoned Sidney Albert Barker. I demand the right to address this court and inform it. Inform the world who poisoned Sidney Albert Barker.
She stands in the well of the court. The journalists are frantic.
Is it not the duty of this court to hear the evidence of anyone who might know the truth of how this poor boy died?
Coroner and clerk consult. Before I know where I am, I'm bundled out of the box, and this strange, staring lady has taken my place.
My name is Miss Christiana Edmonds. It is quite simple. As testimony was given earlier in the afternoon, Sidney Albert Barker and his unfortunate parents visited the shop of Monsieur Armand and there purchased chocolates that I happen to know Monsieur Armand has been deliberately poisoning now for many months. I myself have purchased chocolates from there. I know others who have consumed those chocolates, and all of us have suffered from severe bouts of poisoning.
Every journalist scribbles frantically. Other reporters rush in from other courts. The parents are bewildered.
I demand that all these scientific experts and experiments which have been tried on the town's water fountains are now tried on the chocolates of Monsieur Armand. The man is a poisoner. A French poisoner.
And with that, Madame, all in black, sweeps from the court, followed by a pack of baying journalists.
Monsieur Armand, is it true that you poison your customers?
No, absolutely not.
What do you make of the accusations of Miss Christiana Edmonds that your chocolates are frequently filled with poison?
She is mad. Armand's chocolat are known for their creamy centers and delicious aftertastes. I will sue anyone...
So you don't deny trying to poison the people of Brighton?
I do. Absolument.
But matters do not turn out as I planned. Everyone laughs at my truthful statements in the dock. The newspapers think them most amusing. Monsieur Armand, sell poisoned chocolates, even more customers flock to his shop. Oh, Percy. It's as though some great void separates us. I must not allow it. I must make one final effort to show you the truth. Draw together once more our torn and shredded love. I get young Billy to buy gift boxes of Monsieur Armand's chocolates, lace them with his true flavour, post them to many of Brighton's leading citizens with a covering note saying they are free gifts from Monsieur Armand, to prove conclusively to you, his valued customer, that these, his chocolates, are not poisoned.
When I saw those two parents leave that court shattered, broken, I reached my decision. No longer could I lie. I would hold a public meeting to expose the truth of our drains. I hire a hall, have fly posters printed to post about the town the night before, but on that very evening, before I can start my work, something intervenes.
Alex?
Jacob, you've got to come with me.
What do you mean?
Something really important, vital, has come up.
But what I'm about to do here is...
I know, but you can't do that now. You must come. What you see tonight, you must never tell anyone, you understand?
Well,
the man you will see is extremely important. Never, ever must you reveal his name.
Yes, of course, but...
Right. We are here.
A dingy backstreet hotel. But inside, sumptuously furnished. Thick, luxurious carpets in darkened corridors. Strange smells and scents.
He's in here.
Oh.
He lies on a bed. It is true. He is very, very famous. And very, very fat. Lies naked on his back. Horrible grin on his face. A box of chocolates spilt all across his pink, waxy chest.
Never, ever must you reveal this. What you see here could cause the downfall of the British government. Of the British constitution.
I can see that. But what's happened?
This hotel, and heaven knows I've tried to close it down often enough, but it's protected by a certain alderman, is one used by godless creatures down from London who wish to avail themselves of the flesh. Unfortunately, disgustingly, of the young. Youths too poor to refuse their lucre.
This is terrible, Alex. But what's it got to do with me?
Come next door. Jacob, this is Billy. Billy? Mr. Ormsley.
How do you do, Mr. Ormsley? I see you in the streets. He normally wears a yellow topper.
Yes, I do.
Tell him what happened, Billy.
Well, as I explained to Mr. McLean and Mr. Ormsley, I am in the business of delivering letters. And as I was just in the act of delivering a letter to this particular gentleman, or rather, ex-gentleman...
Yes, Billy.
When he opens this box of chocolates, leans back, starts chatting of this and that, as gentlemen like him often do, then offers me one of his chocolates. I, for particular reasons, didn't take one, but he lit into them, fair tore into them, then goes a livid purple, shook like a giant blancmange, and then dies with this horrible grin stuck all over his chops.
I still don't see why...
Explain what those particular reasons were you didn't take a chocolate, Billy.
Look, Sergeant McLean, I reckon there's one or two things you and I got to nail down before I answer any more questions. I demand a copper bottom guarantee I get the top pitch on the pavement outside the station to sell oranges. Passengers is always thirsty when they get off the trains. And no bother, I move along now from you peelers. One day, I intends to be a businessman of consequence. I know who that gentleman was from the chat I overheard among you coppers. I could talk. I'm the one who knows all about them chocolates. I could not talk. A deal?
Yes, Billy. A deal.
Right, Mr. Ormsley. Sorry about that. Why I did not take that chocolate is on account of me doing a lot of business for Miss Christiana Edmonds. Running here for her, delivering that. One of the things I do regular is buy boxes of chocolates for her. I never use her name. From Armand's Chocolate Emporium. Then, taking the same boxes back the next morning, saying that is wrong, and getting them to replace them with other chocolates.
And so?
Thing is, Mr. Ormsley, I know this half-loopy kid, Sammy. He lives like a rat under the pier. At least I got a proper stable. But I know he does business for Miss Edmonds too. Found out what it was. Punched him till he told me. Normally, he runs errands between different businesses. Runs poison, strychnine to keep the vermin down. But he told me he runs it, without letting him know her name. For Miss Edmonds too.
The chocolates the gentleman in there ate were from Monsieur Armand's.
What are you suggesting?
Got a cigar, Sergeant McLean?
No, Billy, I don't. Cigars are bad for you.
It's all right. The John next door had some. Nice big fat ones.
On getting this news from Billy, we went immediately to Miss Edmonds. Remember her?
I do.
Discovered her, with strychnine and a lot of Monsieur Armand's chocolates, pouring one into the other.
You're saying...
Strychnine is a poison that leaves no trace. Many of the deaths you thought had been caused by our water may have been caused by...
Miss Christiana Edmonds.
That's what I call a good cigar. One of the perks of doing business with rich London gents. They teach you the finer things of life.
I sit alone in my cell on the night before my trial. But I am not worried. This trial shall vindicate me. Show that Monsieur Armand does sell poisoned chocolates. That nothing can now stop me and Percy getting back together again.
Now that all the evidence has been heard, I, Grace Edmund, mother of the accused, have been allowed to enter a plea in mitigation. This is very difficult for me. The Edmonds are a most respectable family. We have lived in Brighton 3 generations now, and always we have tried to live without ostentation and notoriety. Our relations with our neighbours have always been exemplary, and I and my daughter are frequent communicants of the sacrament at St. Bartholomew's Church.
I sit in the court. Watch it. The wild stare of the defendant. The slow agony of a mother.
But the truth is this. This is the terrible secret we have fought so hard to hide from the world. Insanity runs in our family.
Mother?
I, as their mother, have tried to keep the family together while my husband lapsed into dementia. All Christiana's brothers and sisters, likewise. All are now either dead or inhabit asylums. I try writing to them every day, visiting them, though none of them has the wits to even know who I am. As for my daughter, Christiana, my dear Christiana, perhaps I have averted my gaze, not been as honest when judging her behaviour as I might have been, because I did not wish to face the fact. I've prayed and prayed about it, that she too is mad.
I am not mad, Mother! How dare you! In everything I have done in this matter, I have constantly checked that I have been logical. I would rather be hanged than found mad.
The judge grants her a wish. I do not think there has ever been a defendant more happy at being sentenced to death.
Mrs. Edmonds, ma'am.
Sergeant McLean, please sit down.
Thank you. I have come to inform you that your daughter Christiana's sentence of death has been mitigated to one of detention for life in a lunatic asylum.
That is a mercy. A mercy. Except I shall have to go and tell her of it. A tea, Sergeant?
No, thank you, ma'am. So, you're living alone?
A house that once contained many now contains only me. I have been thinking...
Yes, Mrs. Edmonds?
The Prince Regent was a most handsome man. In the pink, surrounded by handsome young officers, the most striking of young girls, Brighton was a most exciting place to be. But it left a legacy. I have admitted one shameful thing in my family. Lunacy. Now I admit another. Syphilis. Inherited by us from all those gay young things about the Prince Regent. Working its way inexorably, unyieldingly through the generations. Scything down the young and innocent. Thank God we have the Lord Jesus to console us.
I will pray for you, ma'am, and the task you have to undertake.
No, Mother. Absolutely not. I am not going into an asylum. I would prefer the gallows. I want to be hanged.
I held my public meeting once the trial had finished. After all the scandal, this only added to the flames. Alderman Hallett was forced to resign. A new reformist council was swept to power. I was appointed chief engineer. Proper drains and water supplies were put in place. Death rates, especially among the poor, fell almost to zero. Other things improved too. Because of its new wholesomeness and the order on its streets maintained by a reformed police force, ordinary, decent working families started to flock down from London. Buckets and spades, amusement arcades, end-of-the-pier shows, and Brighton prospered as never before. We have never been able totally to eradicate the stain of the other side, but as the years passed, adulterers no longer swaggered down the station steps bawling for their carriage. If they do come now, they creep out from a side entrance, scurry into a curtained cab. Both Alex and I have prospered. He is now chief of police. We attend many receptions and functions, which is how, one frost-bound Christmas, we find ourselves at a charity ball being held at the end of our brand new pier.
What is this ball in aid of?
Raising funds for the local asylum. They say the warden has allowed some of the inmates to come.
Oh. Is that the new mayor over there?
Aye. Come a long way since selling oranges on the pavement outside the station, eh?
Then suddenly I see her. Ramrod straight. Eagle-eyed. Rouge smudged across her lips. Powder on her face. Wearing an antique dress. She comes straight at me.
You will dance with me.
I'm...
You came to my trial?
Yes, I did.
Dance?
We do.
That's a very pleasant dress you're wearing.
My grandmother wore it the night she danced with the Prince Regent. The warden let me wear it tonight.
How is your mother?
I haven't spoken to that woman since she said I was mad. I'm told she died years ago. If it hadn't been for my mother, I would now be a happily married woman. You are now a borough engineer.
That's right, I am.
I follow your career in the papers. So all your drains and water mains run perfectly?
They do, aye.
Good. Never again must they be allowed to poison people. Them and that awful, treacherous Frenchman, Monsieur Armand.
And we waltz on. Beneath our feet, an oily black ocean slops to and fro. Over our heads, cold, pristine skies. Distant galaxies, glistening bleakly.
In The Great Chocolate Murders, Christiana Edmonds was played by Sian Thomas, Jacob Ormsley by Chris Donnelly, Mother by Jennifer Hill, Dr. Beard was played by Dorian Thomas, Mr. Hallett by Brendan Charlson, and Mrs. Beard by Angela Barlow. Armand was played by Ewan Tudor, Alex McLean by Derek Riddell, Billy by Jordan Clark, and Sam by Robert Connor. The journalist was played by Gareth Williams, and counsel by Dovrig Morris. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The Great Chocolate Murders was written by John Fletcher and directed in Wales by Kate McCall.
And our true crime season continues throughout the week with the story of a gruesome Victorian murder case that gripped the nation and a real-life detective whose methods influenced Wilkie Collins and Arthur Conan Doyle. It's Kate Summerscale's The Suspicions of Mr. Witcher at 2:45. And for drama at this time, tomorrow a whole new world opens up for Magnolia Hawks aboard the Cotton Blossom Floating Palace Theatre. It's part one of Showboat.
An exploration of silence. Shh.
Quiet, isn't it, when the noise stops? I've long been enamoured of silence. In a low-grade, background hum kind of way, I've also been perplexed by it. 11 years ago, on a retreat in a Zen monastery in India, I was given a koan on silence by the only Zen master in the subcontinent. If you don't know, a koan is a riddle dressed as a poem that you have to answer in kind. My koan was this. What is the sound before the bird sings? Every day, I'd go back to Father Amasami with an answer. I tried all the sensible ones. It's silence. It's anticipation. It's possibility. I tried a few poetic ones. It's a yawn of infinity. And I tried to sound like a proper Zen person. It is a gap in the remorseless rush of mind. But Amasami knew I was faking it. I left the centre with my koan unsolved, and it's been tugging at my inner sleeves ever since. The only thing I knew was that silence was a multiple and complicated thing. Paul Goodman, read here by Christopher Ricks for the Stylus programme on Boston's WBUR station, came up with 9 types.
Do you want me to start now?
Sure.
My name's Christopher Ricks. I've written books mostly about poetry, though I'm not a poet. And I want to start now by quoting a very beautiful paragraph by the thinker and social activist Paul Goodman. He says, "Not speaking and speaking are both human ways of being in the world, and there are kinds and grades of each. There is the dumb silence of slumber or apathy, the sober silence that goes with a solemn animal face, the fertile silence of awareness pasturing the soul, whence emerge new thoughts, the alive silence of alert perception, ready to say this, this, the musical silence that accompanies absorbed activity, the silence of listening to another speak, catching the drift and helping him be clear, the noisy silence of resentment and self-recrimination, loud with sub-vocal speech but sullen to say it, baffled silence, the silence of peaceful accord with other persons." or communion with the cosmos.
A quiet celebration of silence. Shh. Available now on the BBC Radio 4 website.